Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on the magical Isle of Vashon, broadcasting live on the Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band and streaming live all over the world on voiceofvashon.org. The sign across the street at the church says congratulations to the Vashon High School class of 2026. And they just are coming up on their graduation celebrations and their graduation ceremonies. And I add my congratulations, well done, and Bravo Zulu to all of those graduands, because that is indeed one of the English words in the Oxford English Dictionary for those who are moving forward into the next stages and levels of their lives. My greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world who have sent me signals of support, affection, regard, respect, love, all of those human emotions which are being focused in my direction as I work my way through this next stage or next steps in the, what are we going to call this? Anyway, whatever we're going to call it, it is mounting some additional challenges, and we talked a little bit about it last week. We'll talk briefly about it this week in the binnacle list section. But I am so grateful for everyone all over the world who has sent me signals and of support. I really don't know. Well, I do know. I was going to say I really don't know how to adequately express my gratitude, but in fact, I do know, and that is just to say that I'm so grateful for every single one of you, and those who have sent me signals know that I am particularly appreciative of all of that. And those signals have come, in fact, from several places whose relations are themselves being watched very carefully by your captain on the binnacle list. So those are my greetings today going out to all of Captain Joe's people who in particular have sent me those best wishes as we move along. The binnacle list today brings with it no crossings of the bar. And there are a number of people who are having either tests coming up. I happen to be one of them. Or are having completed those tests or are awaiting results. And then the other thing that I have to say about my own situation is that I am indeed losing my voice. And so every so often, and we are now coming up on one of those, I'm going to have to take a short but pithy break to swallow a little bit of black coffee. Warm black coffee, which helps the throat. And it comes from the Black Rifle Coffee Company, which is run by, owned by, and is all of the work that they do is all done by veterans. So right now, here we go. A quick swallow of coffee for the next event. There we go. So I've started the sequence of tests and scans. I had the first one in the series yesterday, and nothing remarkable came out of that one. But clearly there's something going on, and to that end, I have made a couple of temporary, what I'm confident are going to be temporary decisions. The first one is that this coming Saturday is the loadout for Low Tide Celebration, which is going to be held on Sunday. And I have decided after my tour day last Sunday that I am going to take a stand down from tours for an indeterminate length of time. And the reason for this is that I am working with my surgeon to get the biopsy done that needs to be done that we talked about last week, and also to get the CT scan done that we also talked about last week. We need to get those scheduled just as soon as we can. There is some recovery time, I think, from the biopsy in particular, because it has to be done in an OR under a general anesthetic. And so there are special cares and precautions that I am being briefed have to be observed when all of that goes on. I remain, as always, of good cheer. I remain firmly up in the captain's chair. I remain, as always, firmly in command of all that I still command. And that includes my lighthouse out at Point Robinson. I had just a wonderful day last Sunday, and I was able to go the whole almost 4 hours. But I had to take numerous swigs of an indeterminate liquid fluid so that I could keep going. In furtherance of my stated mission to make all of us feel just a little bit better about ourselves and about the world in which we live, the book this week is a real old friend. In fact, it is so old that I looked in the flyleaf and I realized that my mother Toots had given this to me at Christmas of 1955, which was the December of my first class year at the academy, because I graduated with the class of 1956 in June of 1956. And in the name of the book is Thurber's Dogs. And James Thurber, for those of you who are younger than, let's say, I am, which is almost everybody, I guess, that James Thurber was a great American humorist. And he started out on the New Yorker magazine with Harold Ross, who founded the New Yorker magazine in the 1920s. From the time almost that I was able to read until, just about now, I have been a devotee of the New Yorker magazine. And in particular, I go back far enough that I think Ross was still the editor when I picked up my first copy, or I was given my first copy. And one of the people that was a constant supplier of drawings and stories was the great American humorist James Thurber. And Thurber was part of the group that mustered in the Algonquin Hotel between the two world wars. And he was not only an illustrator, but also wrote many different stories and articles. In particular, he wrote about dogs, and in particular, he wrote about cats. Toward the end of his life, he was completely blind, and he was able to draw his dogs and cats without being able to see the paper. And so for people who are Thurber believers, the acquisition of the drawings that he did while he was completely blind are particularly desirable. I suspect, although I don't know this for sure, but I suspect that at least toward the end of his life, that he was not the easiest person to be around. But in any case, the story that from Thurber's Dogs, and Thurber's Dogs was published in 1955, thus the inscription in the flyleaf from my own mother, from Toots, saying December 25th, 1955. But it included stories that went all the way back to the 1920s. The one that I'm going to talk about today in my wanting to make you feel just a little bit better about your life and my life and the world in which we live is a story, chapter 11, and it's called Collie in the Driveway. Now, between the two world wars, there was a man named Albert Payson Terhune. He lived in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey. And in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey, he raised all of these collie dogs. My first dog was a collie. On my grandfather's farm, he was not a farmer, he was a physician, but he was living in a farmhouse. And he had a collie, and her name was Daffy, and that was my first dog. So Terhune raised these collies, and he made a big thing about people coming to visit him in Pompton Lakes to come to the kennels. So Thurber tells a story about a family by the name of Ellis that goes to Pompton Lakes, and they go to Terhune's place, and they drive up to the gate, and in fulfillment of Terhune's invitation, they drove into the estate, for it was quite an establishment. And they hit and killed Jeannie. This brought on a great kerfuffle between Terhune and the Ellis family, which went on for quite a while. It turned out that Ellis was not quite the gentle humanitarian that he had made himself out to be. So Thurber tells his story, and at the end of the chapter, chapter 11, Collie in the Driveway, there is a drawing that he has drawn, and he drew this during the time when he was able to see. So clearly you can see that all the lines come together where they should. In any case, I am recommending for your enjoyment and for your, if you are a lover of dogs, and I know many of you are, and in fact I have a binnacle list crossing of the bar for a much-loved dog by one of Captain Joe's people on the Coast Guard Channel. And if you are a lover of dogs that you still have or dogs that you had at one time, like Daffy, then this book is for you. It may be a little bit difficult to find because it was published in 1955, and it goes back a long way. But it has some wonderful stories. It has some wonderful drawings. And it was done by a person who not only loved dogs and cats, but who did some wonderful drawings about all of them. My magazine this week is The Week. No surprise there. And The Week, so here is one of my favorite columns in The Week, which comes to me from London every week, but doesn't come in any regular way. So the column that I particularly like is called It Wasn't All Bad. And this is the quote from this week's It Wasn't All Bad. A rare copy of the first poem ever written down in Old English has been found at the National Central Library in Rome. The transcription of Cædmon's hymn a short verse attributed to an illiterate 7th century Northumbrian cowherd. How could he have been illiterate and written Cædmon's hymn? Was spotted by researchers in Ireland as they examined the digitized pages of a 9th century manuscript copy of Bede's Ecclesiastical History of the English People. Only two older copies of the poem have survived. Now, I think that's really great when we find ancient scripts, texts like that. And then the other one, which is in that same column, and I really like this story. This one really, really gets to me. And I am going to take another quick sip of coffee from Black Rifle Coffee Company. Here is the second story from It Wasn't All Bad. An RAF pilot who was shot down over northern France in May 1940 was finally buried this week in a ceremony led by members of his 607 squadron. Squadron leader George Morley Fiddler was 28 when his Hurricane, or as my friend John would say, Hurricane, when his Hurricane was overwhelmed by the Luftwaffe. In the chaos on the ground, a pilot assumed to be him was hastily buried and later moved to a nearby military cemetery. Then in 2022, engineers working on a canal found his Hurricane buried deep in mud and a body in the cockpit. He was buried in France on the 80th anniversary of his death. And this reminds me to recognize that there was a Coast Guard exchange pilot in Vietnam, and he was flying search and rescue missions in Jolly Green Giants, big Sikorsky helicopters. And he was shot down, and his body has only recently been recovered. And to me, when we are able to recover and then to bury wherever the family wants that burial to take place, that is a good reminder to all of us that freedom is not free. Going to the other part of the week that I always like to look at is this week is houses with income potential. In Norfolk, there is a house for sale called Walnut Shade. By parenthetical insertion here, not a single house in Cambridgeshire, but Norfolk is the next county up to the north. And so we're going to accept this one. A characterful grade two former hall with medieval origins set in beautifully landscaped gardens and grounds of approximately 2.5 acres. 5 bedrooms, 3 baths, probably pretty fundamental, and almost certainly with at least two of them with a macerator. Kitchen. 3 receptions, garden, parking, a 16-panel solar array, which generated an income of £2,636 for the year 2025. And it shows a photograph of this property. It has a thatch roof, and it is for sale for just under £1 million. That price is within our boundaries, and although it is not in Cambridgeshire, should I receive a sufficient number of aye votes, maybe, just maybe, we'll make an offer on it. And it really does look, it really looks great. Thatch roofs, by the way, parenthetical insertion number 2 here. Thatch roofs, I wanted to know one time what was on the underside of a thatch roof. And so I went to my friend, because I knew that he lived in a house that had a thatch roof in a town called Swaffham Bulbeck. Swaffham Bulbeck is a town that was in existence before the Norman invasion in 1066. And so his wife, Sally, said, well, Captain Joe, go up and lie on our bed and look up underneath and you'll see. The report is that what's on the underneath of a thatch roof is a thatch roof. And you can hear all of the little animals running around inside the thatch roof. End of parenthetical insertion number two. On to a couple of stories that are in my list here. The first one is that the Coast Guard Channel, and those of you who are Coast Guardsmen, wearers of the shield, or those of you who are interested in the Coast Guard, you can subscribe to the Coast Guard Channel. They put together a wonderful part, a wonderful group of clips and pictures and stories about the Coast Guard on D-Day, 6th of June. I don't know everybody who worked on it, but I do know that my friend and colleague, John, J-O-N, who sends me so many good things, was very much involved in the construction of this. And so I send a Bravo Zulu for that. And if you are a member of the Coast Guard Channel, I urge you to click on all of the different links that are in that. It's just a great piece of work. Let me see here. I've got a ship out on the anchorage. And this one's a really interesting one. She is on the anchorage, which is right off of Captain's Quarters. And she is a bulk carrier, one of those cookie cutter ones that look like there was maybe 20 of them. And at every 800 feet, this great big knife comes down and chops them off right aft of the superstructure. And then they send them out to collect gravel or grain or anything that can be moved and loaded and unloaded in bulk. So this one is at anchor right off of Captain's Quarters this morning. And her name is the Alcimos Heracles. And she's under the Cypriotic flag, Cyprus, the flag of Cyprus. And her home port, because she's from Cyprus, is Limassol. She's only 12 years old, and she had, when she was first sent to sea, she had a beautiful gray livery. The word livery is used to denote the color scheme in aircraft and in ships. And in her particular case, in the case of Alcimos Heracles, a grand name for not a particularly grand-looking ship, she has a gray hull and a maroon boot topping. Now, this particular livery is important and sentimental to me because there is a Great Lakes fleet that has a gray and maroon livery. And one of the ships that is in that fleet that's in layup is one that my friend Cody and I hope will someday go back to sea. Probably the most beautiful Great Lakes ore boat there is. And so, Alcimos Heracles, she's only 12 years old, and right now she's looking just a little bit shabby. But she is able to carry over 80,000 long tons of cargo. And she does it economically. She's single screw. She has one great big diesel engine that is direct coupled to a fixed propeller. That means that the diesel engine has to be stopped and then put into reverse when she backs down, which means that it takes her a long time and a lot of space to back down. I was captain in Unimac, and Unimac also had direct drive diesel engines, and those engines had to be stopped and put into reverse in order to back her down. And the stopping and starting mechanism was powered by compressed air. It was quite possible if you used up too many bells to, in fact, use up all of the compressed air. And so the chief engineer, if he was on the flat, and the engineering watch officer, if he was the one in charge on the in the engine room, when he could tell that they were running low on compressed air, he would send a signal up to the bridge, and he'd say, "Captain," something like this, "Captain, you need to take over the ship handling yourself because your trainees are using up all the air, and pretty soon we're not going to be able to answer a backing bell." But they were great ships. They started life out as a Navy small seaplane tender. I'll tell you some stories about those ships someday. So in any case, let's see, we're talking here about things. Here we go, an update on my story about Scarborough Shoals and the Coast Guard cutter Midget that was operating out there. There were a number of comments on the Naval Institute story that I quoted and used in my discussion of this last week. Most of these had little to do with anything except a back and forth as to who actually owned Scarborough Shoals, A, and B, depending on who owned it, let's say an ally to the United States, was it worth lobbing rounds back and forth at each other? And then C, what could be the answer? And of course, I have the answer. My answer is that the senior captain, and my guess is that Midget's captain will be the senior captain, he sends a signal up, close up, that says code is the first flag. That means that the next flags are from the International Code of Signals. And then the next flag's hoist would be all captains repair unto me. And then all of the captains would sit down and they would, as highly skilled and experienced professional captains, come to an agreement as to how they're going to maneuver around each other out on Scarborough Shoal. And then it could be extended to the whole South China Sea. No captain wants to put his command insignia on the table and say, "I was in a collision with another ship. I know the rules of the road. I know how to keep those collisions from happening. And this is the way that we are all, dear captains, going to do it." And someday I will tell the story of an interaction that I had with a Russian captain on one of the Russian factory ships up on the Grand Banks. But that's another story for another time. The Omega Watch is telling your captain that, once again, we have come to the end of our time together. And it is my hope, my wish, and my command that the time that we have spent together, you feel just a little bit better about yourself and about the world in which we live, because the sun is shining here on the magical isle of Vashon. Your captain is headed in the right, if somewhat slower than that to which I'm accustomed, in the right direction. And next week, unless I am recovering from something, I will be with you. This is your captain. As always, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And this is your captain on station and watching properly.